You're listening to His Time. I'm Andy Bates, sitting in for Pastor Jonathan Fisk. It is Monday morning, time for Worldview Watch with our friend Dr. Bob Weiss of Concordia Seminary. Good morning, Dr. Weiss.
Hey, good morning to you and your listeners, and I hope Jonathan's doing well and listening also. Since you said Worldview Watch, I just thought I would interject something here that just came this morning in the Wall Street Journal, and the title is same-sex parents in Italy are left in a legal limbo. What happened here is that this was, of course, one of the last countries over in Central Europe, mid-Central Europe, in addition to Spain, France, Germany, and so forth, to approve the adoption of by same-sex couples of their, now this is interesting, each lady had biological children. One had two and one had one. Through it in Canada, through in vitro fertilization, and of course, sperm donation and other things. And the people in the government in Italy said, "Well, you can adopt your biological children, but you can't, as a quote unquote couple, adopt them as a family." But that changed. This was voted on, and so now over in Italy, there's a storm brewing over this. Can same-sex couples who develop their own children through in vitro fertilization, can they adopt them as a family, a whole family? So the whole issue here basically comes down to what we see here in the United States. The rights of homosexual couples and their children really do hang on the court ruling. And what we have to say theologically about that doesn't mean an awful lot. So that's kind of the world thing that's going on out there. The other thing is just to let people know about embryo research and gene editing. Again, World Watch over in England, they have approved this gene editing, this CRISPR thing, to start looking into human embryos and quote unquote editing their genes, because they have on the average about 100,000 or so, and every 5 years technically they're supposed to be destroyed, the ones that are not claimed by the parents. But again, the debate over there, like it is over here, with this editing of the genes of a human being, it's getting into designer babies and eugenics. So that has created a bit of a discussion and debate over there in England, and as it's an ongoing debate here in the United States. So England has started using embryonic human beings for this gene editing. So that's another world issue. Back here at home, Montana just recently had a vote. People were voting against, is of course one of the states that allows physician assisted suicide, and it came up for a vote and to disband the physician assisted suicide in Montana. However, due to a glitch, a Republican who was against it pushed the wrong button. Maybe you've heard of this, and all of a sudden the vote, instead of 51-49 to disband and get rid of this law, came up 50-50, which meant in Montana the law stands. And he said, the fella said that this was a mistake. I hit yes and then thought, oh no, what did I do? I don't want to vote for assisted suicide. And but it was too late to change his vote. And so so be that as it may, Montana stands as one of the six states that permits physician-assisted suicide. And the last thing deals with two issues of, again, physician-assisted suicide and euthanasia. One, again, here in the United States, and you may have heard of this one also, Andy, a 30-year-old anorexic and bulimic woman died in New Jersey a couple of months ago, and this just came out, because the courts decided. And this is interesting. Here's what they said. They removed her feeding tube and she died. It said, "Force feeding would have amounted to torture and we would have been at the same result. The court chose the correct and compassionate path." So this is something that people have to be tuned into. In my family, having dealt with anorexia, I can tell you it is an insidious disease. But those people who are suffering from this, they need to... they need a lot of care and a lot of people present to help them through this. And it is tough, but once again, this kind of shows its surface as to how the courts are viewing, quote-unquote, the sanctity of human life. And the last thing, just real quickly here, there's a musical out, and it basically started again over in Germany, and apparently it's going to be coming here sometime, and it's called Assisted Suicide, the musical. And it sounds like it's for assisted suicide, but the lady who wrote it, she is against position. Her name is Liz Carr, and she is an atheist, but she's also anti-euthanasia. And so she wrote this play, and apparently when it was performed over in Central Europe, she got a standing ovation for this, because she goes after the phrase dignicide. This is the new phrase that physicians who pursue euthanasia is using. And it basically is, she plays herself, who is against it, but then comes out as another character who is for it. So it's kind of a thrust and parry musical that she wrote some music for this. And so I just want to share this with people because the statement she makes, and this is, again, from the Wall Street Journal, that she really considers herself blessed that euthanasia wasn't part of the cultural radar when she was young. And she says the main watchword for euthanasia now is dignity, and the argument runs that disability, terminal illness, senility, and the like rob it from their victims. Assisted suicide allows people in such circumstances to die on their own terms before their conditions erase their sense of personhood. And so the truth, she says, she insists, is that your state of health, mental or physical, has no bearing on your dignity, which I found an incredibly profound statement. So those are some issues that are happening, quote-unquote, worldwide. So in terms of, there's other things that are ongoing, but from the standpoint of your listeners and how things are being viewed in terms of end of life, which are not disconnected to the beginning of life, that's kind of, those are a few little seeds to plant in your listeners' minds and hearts this morning, Andy.
I think one of the key words you mentioned there that connects both the beginning of life to end of life is the word personhood. We're really grappling with this issue of personhood. What is a person, and what does it mean to be human, as you've mentioned before? And so then we struggle in, especially in the popular worldview of what is a life, or what determines what is a human life and a human life that has value.
Yeah, you know, from our viewpoint, certainly within the context of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, personhood is an embodiment. That means we are body and soul, and we are embodied as persons, people with a body and a soul. And from our viewpoint, to think anything other than that is to flee from creation. So the world, of course, doesn't see things that way. The world is looking at, like, the embryo is just a mass of cells. Of course, they're human cells, but they don't call it a human being. That is, that it has a beginning. And so it has to be, you can play around with it then. Since it's not a person, it's not an issue. And that lends itself, of course, to all kinds of other issues in terms of experimenting, as we said earlier, on embryonic human beings. But I think this personhood issue, as this young lady says here, when she wrote this, and to relate this to people who are struggling over certain illnesses, gets back to the whole issue of what we're running into, certainly here with Lent, the resurrection, so forth, about suffering, that God doesn't suffer apart from us, that he suffers with us. And she doesn't get in much to suffering, but she does get into how legalizing physician-assisted suicide and euthanasia doesn't really empower the person, but it really empowers the doctor, because the doctors make those decisions on what to give, when to give it, and so forth. And so I think the whole issue, as you said, personhood, I would encourage our listeners just to look it up in a dictionary, and it's going to tell them, you know, this is a human being, a characteristic of a human being. But yet the world only sees personhood in terms of having certain characteristics and abilities, for example, like thinking, paying your taxes. You know, another word for it would be moral status, that you can decide what's right and what's wrong. And so they say, well, an infant or a baby in the womb can't do that, so therefore it's not a person. And so unless you have these certain capacities, you're not a person. So that's how the world views it. But, of course, we say that's not true. All we have to do is look at the incarnation, and that sort of sinks that sort of identification.
Well, and that also raises the question, if we cannot clearly define personhood, what is a person? If we leave it a question, then I suppose if we leave it undetermined, then the laws can be all over the place regarding how we regard life as well. If we don't understand when it begins or when it, well, even when it ends, when a person ceases being a person, then we can have laws all over the place. We're just as confused in our laws as we are in our understanding of when, what is a life.
Well, yeah. See, now you brought up an interesting point for our listeners. If one dies, do they cease being a person in terms of a baptized Christian? Okay. We would say no. They still have a body and a soul. The body is either in the ground, and nowadays 62% of funerals are cremations. We still say that this is a body and a soul. This is a person, but this person now has died in Christ. And on the last great day, we'll be raised in glory to a new body, etc. This is what the resurrection is going to be all about on April 16th, when we have the resurrection of Christ to celebrate. So that was really, I have not heard that before, Andy, that question. Do you cease to become a person at your death?
Or and, before that.
Or before that, exactly.
If we are deciding that, if we're making laws that allow physician-assisted suicide, then are we saying that one has ceased to be a person and therefore we must stop all other organ function? Is that what we're saying when we put into law things like a physician-assisted suicide?
I think even if you say you're a person, what I find in this whole physician-assisted suicide business here in the United States and overseas, what is driving this whole thing is self-determination. And that's a phrase that I know in the United States, when you look at the laws of those six states, Washington, D.C. is used. I looked into Belgium's legalization in 2002, and it was used 97 times, self-determination. And according to the Religious Freedom Advocacy Group, the Alliance Defending Freedom, which I know Missouri Synod has worked with, autonomy and self-determination, those two are at the heart of, now I'm going to say this, Western liberal project that shouldn't people have the choice of how and when they die. Even if they use person, it makes no difference because you're autonomous, you're alone to yourself, and you can determine when you live and die. So this gets implanted in older people, then they share this in parenting with younger people, and then this kind of a mindset continues to be passed on. And I think that's where a lot of this gets back to, Andy, is how parents are reading this and then how they address this with their children or don't address it, or even in schools and in churches.
Hmm. Well, lots to for consideration. And as you mentioned, kind of a moot point in Montana, the law did not change, correct?
It did not change, and we wish it would have, but it stands as it is.
Dr. Bob Weiss, Worldview Watch, thanks so much for checking in with us this morning.
My pleasure. God's peace to you and your listeners. Bye-bye.
Coming up in just a little bit, morning prayer, right here on His Time on Worldwide KFUO.